This episode of Film Scene is being brought to you by our Zazzle store. For logoed shirts, mugs, and stickers, go to zazzle.com/filmscene.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, it's showtime.
From beautiful sunny Chicago, this is Film Scene, the podcast for movie fans by movie fans. I'm your host, Tim Gordon, and joining me today is co-host Karen Gordon.
It's not sunny anymore.
Shh. It's the illusion of radio.
It's like a full moon out there.
So today we are going to continue with our countdown of movies from the American Film Institute's 100 Years, 100 Movies list. And coming in at number 99 for them was the movie Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. This is from 1967. And TCM's synopsis is, an aging couple's liberal principles are tested when their daughter announces her engagement to a black doctor. This movie was directed by Stanley Kramer and stars Spencer Tracy, Katharine Hepburn, Katherine Houghton, Sidney Poitier, Cecil Kellaway, and Isabel Sanford. So I'm going to hit some plot points here.
Sounds good.
So feel free to jump in with your trivia if
you
have any.
I will.
So at the beginning of this movie, we meet the couple, who is Joanna and John. They're both returning from what was supposed to be separate vacations to Hawaii, but that's where they met and fell in love. And I believe the movie starts with them arriving. Is it San Francisco that it's set in?
Yes.
At the airport. And then they're going to meet her parents. The fiancé is played by Sidney Poitier, and he's a doctor. So her parents are supposedly progressive folks.
Liberals. I believe her father, Spencer Tracy's character, is a newspaper man
newspaper,
of some sort.
Newspaper publisher, okay. Yeah. And
Katharine Hepburn works at an art gallery.
The thing I read said she was actually the owner of the art gallery.
Ooh.
So her name is Christina in the movie, and his name is Matt. And somehow being a newspaper publisher and an art gallery owner in 1967 made you upper class.
Right.
So you know this is pure fiction.
Well, we know the publishers always walk away with the money. It's everybody else who does it.
That's true. So we're also introduced to their maid named Tilly, played by Isabel Sanford. And out of all the people, she seems to have the most angry reaction to the news of their engagement.
And yeah.
I don't know why that is or was or whatever.
Yeah, we can talk about that. The whole film's about race, you know.
Well, and I don't know if that's because she feels protective of Joanna, the daughter, or if there's something else going on, too.
Well, she's rather rude to Sidney Poitier's character.
Yeah.
Is she angry at him because he's with a white woman, or is she angry at her for being with a black man, or does she just not like the whole idea?
Right. And would she be that way regardless of who the guy was?
We don't get that opportunity to know.
So, obviously, the parents' reaction, especially by Matt, is not good.
Well, I wouldn't say it's not good. It's just, I think they're both just taken aback.
Yeah, I mean, they seem like the type that were always talking the talk. And now when it came time to walk the walk, they don't know if they can do it.
True.
I mean, part of it's out of concern because they know the rough ride that this couple will have in life at that time. But I think there's also suspicion by both of them, especially by him. And he even has some people do some digging on Sidney Poitier's character. So we find out that they, while they were in Hawaii, the couple, you know, met and fell in love pretty quickly. And it's especially Joanna's intention that they are going to actually be married right away, too.
Well, and throughout the whole thing, it's implied that she's just kind of the younger, reckless one of the two.
Yeah, she seems like a
little more
free spirit.
Yeah.
They never give a reason, like, why she was on this vacation in the first place.
It's a vacation. Who needs a reason?
Well, but is it like a celebration of just finishing college or something like that? Or because she doesn't seem to work or have any kind of career path.
She married a doctor. Does she need to work? Maybe that was her plan all along. Maybe she's the evil one.
So we find out that John won't marry her, though, without her parents' approval. And this is something that he hasn't even told Joanna. So she thinks everything's just going to be fine, regardless of anybody else's reactions.
Well, there's a considerable age difference, too.
There is.
Kind of implied as well.
Yeah, and they never really bring that up, though.
Yes.
Directly.
Yes. So.
Through the course of the movie, though, we do learn that he was married previously and had a child, and that both the other wife and child were killed, I believe, in a, is it a car accident
or something like that, yeah.
Yeah. So again, Joanna, being a free spirit and impulsive, invites his parents to dinner, which is where we get the title of the movie.
Sneaky.
Yeah. I think that one of the funniest scenes in the movie is when he's introducing her to his parents at the airport.
Mm-hmm.
And the dad is just literally standing there with his mouth open.
And mom looks really angry.
And confused.
And confused, yes, yes. Well, and I think that's an important point. You know, we talk about race and that it's always, you know, that whites aren't as accepting of blacks. But, I mean, it does go both ways. I mean, I think this film shows that, you know, racism exists among all of us, our prejudices or our preconceived notions.
Well, and, you know, one of the really nice moments in the movie is when Sidney Poitier confronts his father about the situation, and he basically says that his dad always saw himself as a black man that was successful or succeeding in life, and that Sidney Poitier just saw himself as a man, regardless of race. I don't know how true that would have been for people at that time, though. That would have been tough.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and 1967, when the film was released, was a particularly ugly time in U.S. history.
Right.
So, yeah, it's a kind of a strange backdrop. Is he as progressive as he thinks he is? I mean, the whole film makes everyone look like a hypocrite to some degree. I mean, it doesn't, you know, hypocrisy knows no race, and especially in this film.
Well, everyone except the daughter. Who almost...
I think she's naive to the world.
Well, she almost... Until they pointed it out to her.
Well, maybe she didn't. I mean, when you love someone, you overlook a lot of things, and maybe she just overlooked a lot more than most people.
So, you know, they kind of break off into these little groups of people while they're having drinks before the dinner. And both the moms realize that their children are actually in love, and it's not just... something smaller.
That is one of the nicer scenes in the movie.
Also at the dinner is Matt's friend Mike, who's a priest. They don't really say what their backstory is, but they seem to have been friends for a long time.
Yeah.
This guy, Mike, in this conundrum that everyone finds themselves in, and he recognizes the hypocrisy that's all around them. They don't really make it clear why he seems to take such delight in that, but... it makes for some good humor, too.
Well, don't you think sometimes you see, especially your friends, as they really are, even when your friends don't see themselves that way? So perhaps he's known this all along about them, and he's just kind of delighting in...
And he's another character, to me, that seems open-minded, too, right from the beginning.
Ironically, the Catholic priest seems open-minded about marriage... and when this was shot, and that's part of my trivia here, it was still illegal in, you know, more than a dozen states to have an interracial marriage.
Yeah, and they kind of mentioned that in passing in the story.
And by the time it was released, the Supreme Court had upheld it.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, so the irony of it.
So I forgot to mention, before his parents show up, there are a couple scenes, one with Joanna and her friends and John going out for... And at the same time, there's this scene with Matt and Christina at a drive-in getting ice cream. And I don't know why either of those are in the movie, because they don't seem to advance the plot in any way.
Well, I think...
Although it shows that her friends, Joanna's friends, seem to be more like her in their accepting of him.
Regardless. Are they accepting of him, or is it that youthful, you know, we're all being rebels and badasses, and I'm cool because I'm with the different guy?
Well, I
mean, is that part of it, or are they truly accepting of
him? I think it was just more, again, showing the contrast between the younger people and the older people. You also, there's a younger black woman that's working in the household. They never really say what she
does.
Yeah, now
I find that to be the odd scene, because basically the delivery boy, the white delivery boy shows up,
right. Kind
of the beatnik-y,
right.
You know, not quite hippie, a little too clean cut to be a hippie, and you have this bizarre dance scene, and that seems like the most disjointed piece in the whole
movie.
Well,
he gives the younger black girl a ride home. And again, I think it was just there to show that this younger generation was more adaptable at the changing times, perhaps.
True. I just think it was weird because they never really mention either of those characters.
Right, it is weird.
Again.
Yeah. Well, they went home.
Well, the, you know, Isabel Sanford, the African-American maid, she is disturbed by this on many levels. So in a way, maybe she just doesn't like young people. I mean, she's irritated by them. I can understand that as a teacher. I mean, I get irritated by young people all the time.
Well, I think, too, that it shows that change is hard regardless of who it affects.
Yeah. But getting back to that whole ice cream scene, ice cream shop kind of scene where they're driving out for ice cream and he ends up with his blueberry ice cream or whatever.
Boysenberry.
I think that shows how disconnected they are. I mean, I think you and I can sense that now. Did you think you are, or as cool as you think you are, based on what you know or did in the past? We're just not cool. you know, and we're not nearly as old as Spencer Tracy and Katharine Hepburn were, but I think in your head you think we're the cool, well, not that we're the cool parents, but we're at least in touch with society. We're not the old parents, you know, but... You know, I think if we had that kind of, in their minds, they are young and not as out of the loop.
And it seems weirdly for that time to have the parents be the age that they were, because they seemed very old.
Well, if she was supposed to be in her early 20s, like college aged, you know, and their parents were, I mean, Spencer Tracy was in his 60s. Yeah. I don't think it was as unusual for to have an older father, but certainly an older mother. I mean, Katharine Hepburn had to have been late 50s, maybe?
I have no idea. I mean, like we always talk about, I'm sure that they weren't as old as they looked either.
True. I mean, but they were. They were older. They were more established. They were, you know, clearly had put career before family at some point.
So in the end of this movie, before they get to dinner...
Dinner never happens in the film, by the way.
They go to sit down for dinner in the very last scene as we fade out.
Yeah.
But Matt, played by Spencer Tracy, has this very long... it's basically saying that he approves of this couple. And he recognizes that they have this love for one another. And he also recognizes that it's the same as he feels for his own wife. And I think that that last... It's probably 20, 30 minutes long.
Yeah.
I think that's what makes the whole movie. Without that part done by that person in that way, I don't know that this movie would have made the AFI's list. Even.
Well, it brings closure to it, because otherwise you leave really angry at Spencer Tracy for being the bigot that he is.
Well,
because
the whole time he's prepared to tell them that no, he doesn't give his approval, and he thinks... based on what John has told him, that will be the end of it and the marriage won't occur. So, but he also realizes that if he did that, that he would probably lose his daughter.
True. True.
And he makes the comment that while, you know, both accepting of this and, you know, realize that there's real love there, that John's father, to get him to see the light, too. Well, and that's basically what his wife had said, too.
Yes. You know.
So, yeah, and that's really how the whole movie ends.
Do you think part of it, though, beyond race was also the socioeconomic piece, the class piece? Wasn't his father job that he had recently retired from?
But, you know, you could also say that as a mailman, which isn't necessarily a lower class job.
Well, no, it was firm. I think at that time it was probably firmly middle class.
He was able to send his son to medical school.
Wow. Yeah, but I would still say that living in that type of a house in San Francisco, her family was far an urban household.
Well, and you got the feeling, too, that the Spencer Tracy and Katharine Hepburn characters grew up that way themselves, so that it wasn't a new thing just for them, too.
No, I mean, yeah. I mean, so I think it's just as much about class and economics as it is about race.
I think that's part of the reason that they made him a doctor, though. So that you couldn't say that the daughter was going...
Was marrying that. I mean, absolutely.
And in fact, she was probably going up.
Well, yes. I mean, it sounded like he was quite a doctor on the move and was doing quite well for himself at the age that he was.
He's going to do some work in... Did he just come from Africa or was going back to Africa?
I don't remember.
There was some implication there that he wasn't a doctor just for the money.
Yes, that he was working for, like, the United Nations or something to that effect.
Right.
So I think that's an interesting commentary on the time as well.
True.
But I think the bigger piece about this movie that I appreciate is that even though this was some 50 years ago now, not a lot has changed in so many ways.
Well,
I mean, I think your parents would have been shocked if I were of another race, and I certainly know mine would have been.
I think that in some ways, a lot of things are moving the wrong direction from here.
Yeah. I mean, this film, as ugly as pieces of it can be, were, in at least a Hollywood sanitized way, somewhat honest of, you know, confronting people's own prejudices.
I think it's hilarious, the language that they use. That wasn't offensive at the time, but it is now.
Well, language always evolves, and you know, one of the constant things that I always have to harp on as an English teacher in particular is that, you know, words only have the power that you assign to them. So if it was not offensive at that time, and later we became offended by it, we evolve. Of course, one ugly thing, and something else will step up to take its place. So
I have a note written down here that be almost. Plays out like it's a filmed play.
In some ways, I could see...
Ever a play, but I could imagine it being staged that way, especially the last half.
Well, yeah, I think there's that series of almost vignettes, like you said, with the fathers and the mothers and the father and mother, everybody's particular bias and prejudice moving forward with this idea.
I think it would be really interesting to stage this thing as a play. Almost exactly, it'd be a gay couple instead of an interracial couple. And you wouldn't.
How about a gay interracial couple?
And you wouldn't have to change much of the language even.
Well, no. I mean, and that's just it. Like I said, this is why I think it's so... 50 years later, it's still such an important film because we still have all these... I mean, more personable than personal than sitting down at a dinner table with other people.
Even though they
never feel event that you're welcoming someone else to your table... You know, sometimes under duress.
So we watched this most recently on the Blu-ray that I have from Twilight Time, and I thought it was a gorgeous high-def print. I don't know, did you notice that even?
I mean, I don't notice the artsiness of it that you do, but I'm always astounded at how sharp they can make these
prints. Well, I thought it looked great and it sounded great, even though there's not... I mean, it's mostly dialogue, but there are a couple what now seems out of place music portions. They repeat the same song probably three times in the movie. and it doesn't seem to fit anymore to me.
So that's the only dated part about it?
Well, the cars, the clothes, some of the language, like I said.
Sadly, the furniture has come back.
I forgot to mention, too, that Christina, the Katharine Hepburn character, had this co-worker slash friend from the gallery that does this quiet kind of racism, almost like in a sympathy kind of way, like she's feeling sorry for Katharine Hepburn because this tragedy has happened to her family.
I believe we would call that microaggression today.
But it causes this person to get fired from the gallery, so she gets what she gets, huh?
Yeah.
About the Blu-ray, though, I know that the anniversary of this movie is coming up, and I think the studio themselves are releasing their own copy of it on Blu-ray. And I have a feeling it would be from the same print, but who knows. The Twilight Time one is awfully good in itself. So. Did you have any more trivia or fun facts from this movie?
What would you like to know? You know, it's such a funny movie.
Well, before you start, it's funny because I see it listed as comedy drama. And
I think it has that darker comedy, like you want to laugh, but you're afraid to because you'll be just as big of a hypocrite as everybody in the film.
I did have down that this won two Academy Awards, one for Best Actress for Katharine Hepburn.
One of four she won, correct?
Probably.
Well, I think she holds close to a record for winning as many.
And one for Best Original Screenplay. Something that I thought was interesting as I looked at the Academy Awards from that year, the Best Picture winner was In the Heat of the Night.
Also dealing a lot more directly with race.
And also starring Sidney Poitier.
Yes.
Guess Who's Coming to Dinner was also nominated for Best Picture. Sidney Poitier was not nominated for Best Actor or Supporting Actor.
In either film?
Either movie.
Wow. That says a lot. Now, did he ever win?
Yeah, he was the first to win.
But for which film?
I don't know what movie it was. I didn't know this, but Cecil Kellaway was nominated for Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, playing the priest.
I did not know that.
And Spencer Tracy was also, probably should have won.
He and, I have to say, Cecil Kellaway and Isabel Sanford are probably the comic relief to the film.
True.
So there was quite an interesting dichotomy there.
I'm trying to find what he won for. So give
well,
me,
you're doing that.
Yeah, yeah. Give me some trivia.
Interestingly enough, Katharine Hepburn has never seen, or had never seen, she's no longer with us if you didn't know, had never seen a completed version of the movie. She said it was just too painful because Spencer Tracy had died just a little more than 2 weeks after filming was completed. She had also had to put up some backing money on it as well because the studio was afraid he wouldn't make it to the end of filming. He was quite ill.
Yeah, I read that he would only film for like 3 or 4 hours a day from like 9 o'clock in the morning till noon, and then that was it.
Man, yeah. He was not well.
Sidney Poitier won for Lilies of the Field.
Oh, okay.
Which I don't think I've ever seen.
Oh, yes, I'm seeing it right here now.
So what else you got?
Let's see. Well, you just talked about Spencer Tracy and his ill health. The movie was still showing in theaters when Martin Luther King was assassinated. So, again, that turbulent time of the late 60s most certainly, it almost makes this film feel like, you know, it's kind of fluff compared to the seriousness of things. You know, people being assassinated and rioting and, you know, this is a relatively calm film, but I guess it does bring it into your home more than perhaps, you know, if you're living in an upper middle class white neighborhood, you would be so far from rioting and such that, you know, suppose this was a calmer, sneakier way of bringing that right home to you.
There's a line in the movie, too, where someone says something about, you know, guess who else is coming to dinner? And the maid says, Martin Luther King. And I read just now that they had cut that line for a long time because he was just assassinated right after this was released. But it's now back in on home video when you get it. So.
This film also is said to have been responsible for changing the way, they market films featuring African-American actors moving forward, because there was the old, oh, that's not going to play in the South. We shouldn't show that or film that. So it did help break through those barriers as well. You know, I mean, the power of a little film can do a lot.
Is that it?
I mean, there's lots of itty-bitty tidbits here and there. Marriott Hartley was considered for the role that ended up going to Katherine Houghton. Is that how you say that?
Yeah, Houghton, I think so.
Houghton.
Houghton.
Houghton, who was, I think you already mentioned, that's Katherine Hepburn's niece.
I did not say that, but
that is Katherine Hepburn's niece. Who knew? Well, I guess I do. And this was the 9th and final film featuring Spencer Tracy and Katherine Hepburn.
There is rumor that that's actually Katherine Hepburn's daughter.
I've heard that as well. I've heard that as well. And she really never had much of an acting career. Not Katherine Hepburn, the niece.
This was the biggest part she ever had. And, you know, she did some other things, but obviously not of major stature.
True.
Cecil Kellaway is cousins with Edmund Gwynn, who played Kris Kringle in Miracle on 34th Street.
Well, what do you know?
You can see some kind of resemblance there.
I guess I never paid much attention to it. Interesting.
Your source for Cecil Kellaway
trivia. Oh, that's silly. So, yeah, I mean, that's...
No more?
Not a lot of gossipy stuff going on with this one.
You know, even though this is a movie that I like a lot, and I think it's one of those movies that you tend to like the more you see it, it's another one that I'm surprised is on this AFI list.
How come? Do you think it would be up higher?
No.
Or just not at all?
Not at all, just because it seems like a smaller film to me.
Well, I think it feels like a smaller film in so many ways, but I think it should kind of feel like a smaller film.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way to make it an epic.
Well, and at the time, it was probably quite controversial just to do it in the first place.
This
push
is true.
To have this... you know, put in your face, because I'm sure a lot of people identified with Katherine Hepburn and Spencer Tracy as that, oh yes, I'm liberal and I'm accepting of people and I love everybody, until your child is with a different person.
Right.
You know, until it's actually in your living room or your dining room table. You know, I think it's very interesting to confront that head on.
Well, and Stanley Kramer, who directed this, did a lot of that kind of stuff during his career. So
he did.
He probably made lots of enemies.
True, true.
He did a similar movie called The Defiant Ones, starring Sidney Poitier. And, who's the actor that's in that?
I don't know.
Tony Curtis.
Oh, I know the one you're talking about. Is that the one where they were escaped convicts?
Yeah, they're prisoners and they escape, but they're chained together. So, and Tony Curtis plays a pretty big-time racist, so you can tell how things
and they were
would
chained
happen
together.
That's what I just said.
Oh, I didn't. Sorry. Sometimes I don't listen when you're talking.
Yeah, who does? So this is the same guy that directed Inherit the Wind and Judgment at Nuremberg, along with It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. So
did he?
One of those doesn't quite fit.
Yeah. Was he Jewish?
I don't know.
I thought I had read, and perhaps I'm thinking of someone else, that was part of the backstory, that he himself felt, not direct racism in the way that you would based on skin color, but based on religion, you know, that he had felt that to some degree. But I could be confusing him with someone else, so don't quote me on that.
Yeah.
Or it just sounds like a really good story.
Yeah, you know? Did you just make that up?
I did not just make that up, no. But it seemed like I had...
Made it
he
up.
Had some type of more personal encounter with it than just, you know, oh, this would make a good film that would make us some money. Like there was more of a moral compass to what he was doing.
Could be. Yet he was married 3 times, so.
Well, so let's not talk about Spencer Tracy and Katherine Hepburn carrying
on
forever.
The compass went askew.
Yeah, well, you know.
Well, technically Spencer Tracy was only married once, so.
Yes, but not to Katherine Hepburn.
No.
Who actually found him dead. Did you know that?
Recently?
No. He was making his morning cup of coffee. She found him dead on the kitchen floor. He had a heart attack, so.
Yeah, I think I think I did know that.
But story. He was like diabetic and had all kinds of other problems. Yeah, it wasn't problems. A surprise. No, he had been struggling and yes.
So for this movie, if you were going to give it on a 5-star rating, what would you say?
I'd say this is a strong 4.
Yeah, that's how I feel too.
I think it would be interesting to see, like you said, how this would play out today. Sadly, I don't think it would play out much differently.
No.
as more things change, the more they stay the same. And, you know, I think that's the sad part about it is that, you know, if people don't like it, it's probably because it hits a little too close to home.
Yeah, although saying that it's 4 stars, I don't know what it would take to make it 5. And I don't know that
I think there's some parts that carry on a bit long.
Yeah.
It's not a fast-paced movie, which is fine. And there's some small pieces that just don't fit. Like I said, with the delivery boy and the, household help, you know, dancing their way out the door with this wacky 60s, like, music going on. It felt like part of the Brady Bunch, you know.
Well, and like I said earlier, the whole thing when they go out with her friends, I mean, they don't make mention of that again. It kind of seems like filler, I guess.
True. I
think the pacing is part of what makes it feel more like a play to me, too. Some of the scenes are longer.
It's longer, and I think you don't get as much backstory as you want. You know, I think that's part of the allure of it, why I would give it a strong 4. You don't know a lot about Dr. Prentice. Just these little bits and bites that you piece together and make the inference that he's a decent guy. But
well, yeah, they do a clever thing where he makes a long-distance call from their house, and he leaves money on the table to pay for it.
They said with inflation, the $2 he left on the table would now be about 16. So
there
just,
you go.
Just saying. but yeah, he shows he has consideration for others and, you know, is a decent guy. Well, like you said, they allude to the fact that he did humanitarian medical work.
Right.
So yeah, I don't know. I don't know what would make it different. Maybe if it was the other way around. Maybe if she was the one coming to dinner. That would be an interesting turn of events.
Especially since she didn't seem to have a job or anything.
Yeah, here's this girl freeloading off of my son who's a doctor, this poor widower, you know. She's just using him.
Well, any final thoughts there on Guess Who's Coming to Dinner?
You know, I think this is one of these films that, like I said, I think it still very much holds water today. At least the themes do, if not the, you know, some of the wacky 60s giveaways that are in there. This is one of these that I would say if you have teenage kids that you need to sit and watch with them. Because I don't think kids see the racism that still exists today, even though they may go to quite diverse schools and have diverse friends. Again, it's very different when it's in your own house. And it shouldn't be, but it is. And I think this is one of those things that would prompt some good conversation. If you're looking to bond with your teenager and you can make them watch a film with you,
and
I think this is a good one.
And it's in color.
It's in color, so you don't have to listen to them complain that it's in black and white. Absolutely. You know, this is one of those important ones. It'd be interesting to show it in schools, too. But
well, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, that's going to do it for us. If you have any questions or comments, drop us a line at film.scene@yahoo.com. And look for us on Facebook. We're at facebook.com/filmscenepodcast. We're also on Twitter, @filmscene1. Don't forget about our half.com store, too, for great deals on books, movies, music, and games. Click on shops in the bottom left corner and type in TGOR1. And give us a rating and a review on iTunes as well. Until next time, I'm Tim.
I'm Karen.
And thanks for listening.